On October 2nd, 2024, the Bozeman Area League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, the Bozeman Public Library, and the Belgrade Community Library sponsored a forum to hear the pros and cons of CI 126 and CI 127, which will be on the ballot in the November general election. This event was held at the Bozeman Public Library in the large meeting room.
Welcome, everybody, to Bozeman Public Library. My name is Beth Boyson. I'm one of the adult services librarians here at the library. Thank you for attending this ballot initiative forum. This forum is for information only and does not endorse or promote any vote for or against candidates on the upcoming ballot. This meeting is being recorded by KGBM 95.9 Gallatin Valley Community Radio and will be available to listen to as a podcast on their website. Absentee ballots for the election will be mailed out on Friday, October 11th, and can be returned by mail or in person from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday at the Gallatin County Election Office in Bozeman. Ballots are new and must be received by 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November 5th. Special thanks to our forum sponsors, Bozeman League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, Bozeman Public Library, and Belgrade Community Library. We have two speakers. Matthew Martin Fortin is going to speak for us as opposed to the measure, and Mr. Frank Garner is going to speak in favor of it. Our moderator is from the League of Women Voters, Jane Artson Schumacher. Jane, do you have some rules that you want to read aloud?
Yes. Good evening. Can you hear me? Am I good? I can't even tell if I turned it on. Good evening and welcome. My name is Jane Arnson Schumacher. I'm tonight's moderator on behalf of the event sponsors, and I'm going to repeat them. It is the Bozeman Area League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, the Belgrade Community Library, and the Bozeman Public Library. I especially, though, want to thank the two people who did all the work to, I just showed up. The work was done by Patty, sitting in front with the League of Women Voters, and by Beth. They called all the candidates, they made the arrangements, they made the confirmations that they would be here, and really they set everything up. And I'm going to keep going. This forum is an informational forum, not a candidates forum. It will be featuring Constitutional Initiatives 126 and 127. As Beth just said, the person speaking in favor of the initiatives is from the Montanans for Election Reform, Frank Gardner, and former state legislator Matthew Monforton is opposing the measures and will speak to his opposition. Thank you both for being here tonight. I will go over the forum's format and rules. Each person or each speaker will have 15 minutes to introduce themselves and provide a general overview of the initiatives and their positions. I will then open the floor to questions from the audience. Please stand when you ask your question. I think it's difficult for people to hear you, especially if they're behind you. So please stand and present your question. Questions may be directed at either one or both of tonight's speakers. However, each speaker will have the opportunity to make a comment, whether or not that question was directed to them. Responses from the speakers will be limited to 2 minutes. The moderator will intervene if questions, answers are repetitive or lack courtesy. The timer will inform each speaker when they have 1 minute remaining, 30 seconds remaining, and no time remaining. Speakers are asked to finish promptly when their time is up. I want to thank Patty Steinmiller, who is with the League of Women Voters, who is our timer tonight. The moderator will ask members of the audience to pose questions without... without comments or editorializing. Tonight is not the time for our audience to voice their view or try to convince others to change their views. If questions from the audience can be answered with a yes or no, the speakers will still be allowed to qualify or explain their answers. The forum is meant to help voters become familiar with the positions. other speakers representing the issues, not to force speakers to answer with a one answer, to provide one answer responses that do not feel comfortable to them. Sorry?
A one-word answer, right.
There you go. Again, the moderator will intervene if questions or answers are repetitive or if courtesy is not shown. Each speaker will have two minutes for a closing statement as we end the evening. Any questions for anyone? If not, we will move on to their opening. I'm going to call it an opening statement, and they will each have 15 minutes. Thank you. I think we'll start with the proponent of the issue, Frank.
Okay. Well, thank you. First, I want to thank the folks that put this together and the folks that bothered to come out tonight and be willing to listen and being engaged in your government. And I think more than anything else, it's why I'm here. So the quick introduction is, my name is Frank Garner. I'll give you the quick bio. It's going to sound like I can't keep a job, but I was a career policeman. Spent a year in Afghanistan as a police trainer, worked in healthcare for a while, and then spent four terms in the Montana legislature from Kalispell. So I grew up in this state, raised my family here, and when I got done in the legislature, I had to decide what I thought was the most important thing I could do with my time. And this is it. It is the most important issue that I think that you will have on the ballot and that faces us right now. And because it's about the ability for us to work together and make hard decisions, something I think we've done a pretty good job of in this state as somebody who grew up here and raised his family, but that has become increasingly hard to do. I'm going to share with you why I think that is and why some of these, why these initiatives that we're going to talk about tonight are going to help us get back to that Montana we know. I'm starting my timer, forgive me, just so I keep myself on time here a little bit. But if we could just go through, I'm going to show you a few slides here to kind of help illustrate it. So first, I'm with a group called Montanans for Election Reform. It's a ballot group that is supporting initiatives CI 126 and 127. And I won't go down the whole list, but you can see that it's a bipartisan group of people from Montana, names that you probably know from your region that agree on this mission. And that mission is putting Montanans back in charge of their election system. I'm going to tell you why you're not right now here in just a minute. Next slide, please. So to begin with, our goals as a coalition are to protect your freedom to choose who you want to vote for in every race, to put voters first, and you're not right now, to give voters a way to make our politicians more accountable. And we're going to show you how this does that and to align our election system with Montana's values, kind of that state I told you that I grew up in, not that we agreed on everything, but that we had an environment that we could have hard conversations with. I had the privilege of being a colleague of Mr. Monfortin's in the, I believe, 2015 legislature. We've had a lot of hard conversations. We've been able to agree on a lot of things, but we had an environment there where we could agree on tough subjects and where I respected his right to be wrong on the rest of them. And I'll share more about that with you here in just a minute. Next, please. So to begin with, we're going to talk about our primary system and the problem that it poses right now and why it makes it so hard for us to get things done. I usually don't have to take a poll. I don't have to show you a survey that says our political system and our environment is much more divisive. It's much harder to get things done than it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. When I talk to people, most of them agree and they understand. We're not always sure why. Here's some of the whys. So to begin with, we have a system where in our primaries, where we functionally have, in Congress, for instance, 8% of the people that are electing just over 80% of the representatives in the primary, where the fewest number of people vote. So I'm going to guess there's 30 or 40 people in here. So just to do the math here real quick, I'm going to pick the three folks in the front row. Imagine a system where our agenda is controlled by those three people, right? Where what we talk about, the solutions we try to get done, are managed and controlled to a great degree by those three people. That's the math a little bit on what our primary system looks like, right? We have a choke point in our election system where we are functionally electing people in the primary system that go on to the general election and either are practically or functionally, they don't have any competition, right? The example is the Eastern District Congressional race, where you had a primary where the winner got 30-some percent of the vote in an election cycle where 40% of the registered voters, the math is about 15% of registered voters, meaning 85% of the people did not vote for that candidate, and that candidate is the presumptive nominee. Ask his opponent. His opponent's going to tell you he's going to win, right? And going to go to Congress, right? You want to know why people aren't talking about the things you're talking about at your kitchen table? Why it's so divisive, and why, especially in our state, when special interests come to call, they know we're a cheap date. Because all they have to do is come and pick off the three nice ladies in the front row, right? Spend an unbelievable amount of money, have an overweighted impact on our election system. So to begin with, our primary system is a big part of our problem, right? Now, also, when you look at our primary system, because in Montana, about 40% of people don't identify with a party. So when they walk in and they're told you have to pick a ballot, you have to pick a side, they look at you like you're crazy, right? What do you mean I can only vote for a certain number of people? This year in my county, I got four ballots. I could only choose one of them, and I could only vote for the people on that one ballot. If I was a Libertarian and I wanted to vote for the Libertarian candidate, there's one. If I vote for them, I am unable to vote or consider anyone else on those ballots, those other ballots, right, who are eligible to be on that ballot. Now, whose rule is that? And who does that serve? Because it's not the voter. It's not me, right? And this is in a system, in a place where we know the majority of our representatives are actually being selected, right, in our primary system. So it makes us more vulnerable, right, because of those special interests that I talked about, and we're incentivizing the wrong behavior. If you want to know why we're not talking about what you're talking about at your table, when it comes to politics, it's because we're not, right? I could go down the whole list of things probably that I think most of us would agree are important, but they're not the headlines you're reading, because these things are driven, I have been there, they are driven by the wrong incentives. And it's not that we don't have good people, because we've had good people serve, but we've stacked the deck against them. It's what causes division and gridlock, because we're bringing these extreme positions, which are showing up in our primary, right, that those three or four people are controlling, I mean, in terms of the math, right? And those are finding their way into our policy. Next slide. So real quick, CI 126 says we are now going to have, instead of those four ballots, everybody who's eligible is on one. I get to pick who I want from that ballot, regardless of their party designation. I get to choose who I think will best represent me, not who somebody else feeds me and says, this is only the people you get to choose from. And then the top four people from that primary race go to the general, where the majority of people will vote. So immediately we have first a system that says you're going to have four people move forward. You're going to have more competition. You're going to have the chance to hold people accountable. And more than anything else, you're going to have the freedom. You do. You don't need anybody's permission. You get the chance to vote for who you think best represents you. Okay? Then CI 127 says when we get to the general election and we have those more candidates that now have to listen to what we're going to say, not just the three folks in the front row. Now all of a sudden, more than half of you I have to talk to, more than half of you I have to work with. I have to govern more broadly. I have to build coalitions. I have to work harder, right? And that gives you the chance to work harder. It makes it harder for special interests all of a sudden to have the impact that they've had before, right? Because we say with CI 127, you have to have a majority winner. And we know that causes the representatives to have an incentive that says, now I have to pay more attention to what you think and say than I do the guy in the little office down the hallway or the person that shows up with the big checkbook in the springtime. Okay? These two measures change the incentive from special interests to the voter. Okay? Next. So, as I said, with CI 126, the things that you should take away from it, everybody's on one ballot now. You have the freedom to vote for the candidate you choose. You have more competition with those top four moving on. And those choices and that ability gives you more control now as a voter than you have now. And with CI 127, on the next slide, again, because you have to have a majority winner, it's going to make people more responsive. It's going to make me, as a candidate, as a representative, have to now talk to more of you, have to build coalitions, and work to get along. Think about how diverse we are as a state, as a country, right? How is it that we get along? How is it that we manage to have tough conversations and to make decisions? We've done it for a long time pretty successfully. And the reason it's gotten harder is because people have figured out how to game the system that we have, right? Inject, since Citizen United, loads of money into that system and have an overweighted impact on what happens. So we're going to change it. Now, it's, you know, I'd love to tell you that this group of Montanans that's working in this coalition that we invented this, but we didn't, right? We're just really good at taking credit for other people's work. We've been able to go out there and look and see what works out there in the community. The reason we don't have a top two is because you can have that system can be gamed a little bit more, even when you have an open primary. That's why we have four, and to allow for more competition, and why people can go to the general and give you more choices. It serves you better. That's who we're trying to make sure we're working for, is the people of Montana. I'm a volunteer. The reason I am here tonight is because I think this is the most important thing I can do for my family, for my children, and for my state. Next slide. And I'm going to have to rush through here a little bit to make sure I honor your time. But again, some of the main effects that I want to say are the ability for you to undercut extremism, increase competition, and change the incentives. You're going to have people say a couple of things, and then I'm going to go through a couple of slides and summarize here in just a minute. But you're going to hear them say, you know, it disadvantages, you know, my group, right? We enjoy some privilege right now in our current system, and we don't want that to change. That's the point. It's not just the problem. It's the point. The person that should have the advantage in this system is you, the voter. Right? You're going to hear people say that, you know, we shouldn't do this or we can't do this, right? Montana can't do what local governments even and other states have done, right? That we can't do that. That there's, you know, these hoops are too big for us. That all the attorneys we've talked to, the vetting that we've done, you know, through the system to make sure that these are going to do what they say they're going to do can't be done. Next slide. I wanted to wait till you were away so I could make it harder, right? Lask is a good example, just real quick. Crazy things, they in one election cycle after they went to open primaries, their system's a little different than what we're proposing, and I'll explain that quickly in a minute. But they're working on things like energy, schools, education, right? Crazy stuff like that. Is that stuff you're talking about at your kitchen table? Because it's the kind of stuff we're talking about at mine. Okay? So the last thing for you to know is for that majority winner, we have to have, there's a legislative component, right? People are going to tell you that the legislature gets to pick the winner. They don't, right? There are rules that we have to put in place and a system to put in place that decides how we do that. And CI-127 makes that the problem of the legislature. Next slide. So it's simple, right? These are the kind of reforms that give you more freedom, choice, and accountability for our leaders. Next slide. And we'll get to these when you start asking questions. Okay? My time is up. Thank you.
And we will now hear from Mr. Monfort.
Thank you very much. My name is Matthew Monforton. I am a fifth generation Montanan, actually fifth generation Gallatin family. As Frank alluded to, we served in the legislature together in 2015. I'm currently a practicing lawyer here. We won't go into that too much. Frank mentioned at the very beginning that this is an important initiative. I not only agree with him, I think he's understating it. CI-126 is going to, if it passes, will bring enormous changes to the way that we do elections. I've looked at social media and looked at how conservative Republicans seem to be reacting to 126. They seem to be a little skittish. They seem to be a little nervous. To be honest, from what I can tell, conservative Republicans in this state have no idea what's about to hit them. They have no idea the kind of devastation that CI-126 is going to inflict upon them. So I know what you're thinking. This is the League of Women Voters. A lot of you already are supporting CI-126, and you're probably thinking, okay, I've heard that CI-126 is going to weaken the parties. It's going to give more voices to voters. It's going to keep those right-wingers from getting elected. What's not to like? Isn't this guy supposed to be convincing me to vote against CI-126? And the answer is yes. I will explain to you why, even if you're not a conservative Republican, this is a bad idea for you too. In order to do that, I have to take us on a journey of 200 years of American political history, and I've got to be able to do it in about 2 to 3 minutes if I'm going to be able to present all the stuff that I need to present. So bear with me. This will all make sense when I get through it. Throughout most of our history, strong political parties have prevented us from having demagogues and tyrants in positions of power. The word demagogue appears 21 times in the records of the Constitutional Convention in 1787. It was one of, we have the first frame. It was one of the top two evils that the founding fathers were worried about. And the framers so worried about demagogues? Well, one of them described demagogues as pretended patriots who promote false reports, what we would call fake news today. Alexander Hamilton referred to demagogues who become tyrants, who become the people that generally are the ones that overturn republics. The founders, in turn, learned about demagogues and tyrants from Greek philosophers. So if you look at Plutarch, he described a demagogue as a fellow remarkable for nothing but his loud voice and brazen face. Aristotle said that with demagogues, flatterers are held in high honor. And Plato's Republic teaches us that the most decent parts of a tyrant's soul are enslaved. And with that small part, the maddest and most vicious as their master. Does this sound like anyone we know? Hold that thought. If you like these kinds of rulers, you'll love CI-126. We've avoided these kinds of rulers, these kinds of demagogues and tyrants, because we've had strong political parties throughout our history. CI-126 will eliminate that safeguard. Next slide, please. For most of our history, we've had strong political parties, and those strong political parties have selected the nominees for the parties. The stereotypical smoke-filled rooms, quite often with fat old white guys. Now, it may not seem fair that these fat old white guys did the choosing for the most part and selected nominees, but these folks were generally party professionals devoted to politics, policy. They generally knew the candidates, including the presidential candidates. It might seem unfair that these folks did most of the selecting for 200 years, but if you didn't like the candidate that the Democrat smoke-filled room selected, you could pick the candidate that the Republican smoke-filled room selected. And so through that process, both of these smoke-filled rooms had a huge incentive to make sure that they picked good candidates, not only candidates that could win, but candidates that could govern effectively and not embarrass the party like certain candidates that we've seen today at the national stage. So the smoke-filled rooms had to compete and had to compete with one another and pick good candidates. Through this process, we got people such as Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower. Not every single nominee that these folks picked was that good, but most of them were good. And most importantly, these folks did a very good job of keeping us away from the bad folks. Can you go back to slide one? They did a very good job of keeping these guys out of power. So this is the system that we had for 200 years, for almost 200 years. Can you go to slide three, please, Beth? So up until about 1968, if you got a ballot, and this is one of the ballots you would have gotten if you voted in 1968, for nearly 200 years, states allowed political parties to share with us the information that they had about their nominees. So parties would vet candidates, and then the results would be on the ballots. So we would have the benefit of the party's wisdom and the party's knowledge when we saw that ballot. We would know, for instance, that if we picked Hubert Humphrey had the Democratic Party's good housekeeping seal of approval. We would know that that's who the Democrats selected. They vetted that person. They're telling us through the ballot, this is our guy. He'll do a good job. Vote for him. Same thing with all the down-ballot candidates. Same thing with all the candidates in prior history that were selected this way. The parties were allowed to use ballots to communicate with us, and that's how we got good candidates. All this started changing in 1968. In 1968, the Vietnam War was raging. 80% of Democrats were strongly against Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson looked around, said, okay, I can take a hint. I'm out of here. Bye-bye. Democrats were excited. They thought they'd get an anti-war candidate. Instead, they got his vice president, Hubert Humphrey, who was a very pro-war candidate. Democrats were outraged. They had the 1968 Democratic Party convention in Chicago turned into a massive riot. People were upset. A young progressive by the name of George Cohen and other progressives took over the party rules and said, "We're done with the fat old guys. We're done with the smoke-filled rooms. We're going to have primaries. We're going to take away power from the parties. We're going to give it to the people." Democratic voters are going to now select Democratic nominees. Then a few years, GOP did the same thing. So what we had, sorry, next slide, Beth. So what that produced is a situation where before 1968, the ballots communicated to us exactly what kind of candidates they had selected. So we knew when we picked a candidate, it was the party's candidate. Now, with closed primaries that developed after 1968, instead of the party selecting the candidates, it was the Democratic voters or Republican voters selecting the candidates. Now that ballot's not communicating the same amount of information to us. It's giving us a distorted view of what the parties want, because it's not really the parties, it's the voters telling us who they selected. A lot of states, including Montana, moved to open primaries. Now, they're calling their system open primaries. It's actually a jungle primary. What we have now is an open primary in Montana. Open primaries exacerbated this problem because now it's no longer Republican voters selecting Republican candidates. It's Republican voters and independents and crossover Democrats. So now we're getting an even more distorted picture. And you would think that with non-party voters selecting candidates, eventually a non-party nominee might emerge through the system. And in 2016, that's exactly what happened. Now, I know a lot of you are thinking, okay, this is all interesting. What does this have to do with CI-126? Bear with me. I'll get there. Next slide, please. So in 2016, Donald Trump used open primaries to take over the Republican Party and win the nomination. This is something that was reported on by CNBC, by Brookings Institute, Washington Post. In January 2024, Politico had a very interesting article. They said, the question was, did a young Democrat activist in 1968 pave the way for Donald Trump? Referring to George Cohen back in 1968. Short answer, yes. Donald Trump was able to use open primaries to take over the Republican Party. It's hard to remember now, but in 2016, the GOP establishment did not want Donald Trump, but the party was too weak to be able to stop him. If the pre-1968 party structure and party rules that existed in 2016, Donald Trump would not have won. He would not have gotten the nomination. Instead, he won the nomination, he was elected to the presidency, and on January 6, 2021, Donald Trump brought this country to the verge of the biggest constitutional crisis in our history. So what we have now is a system that is producing the kind of demagogues and the kind of tyrants that the founding fathers warned us about. It's happening not because the parties are too strong, but because the parties are too weak. Okay, so you're thinking to yourself, great tutorial, Matthew. Thank you so much for telling us about demagogues and the Democratic Party convention in Chicago in 1968. What does this have to do with CI-126? Here's my answer to the question. And it's the reason why you need to vote against CI-126. CI-126 will make this bad situation worse. It will not fix the problems that Frank and I agree exist. It won't fix them. It will make them worse. Next slide, please. Here's why it will make them worse. CI-126 will take us further down the road that we've been traveling, a rather dark road that we've been traveling for the last 60 years, 50 years. It will take us to the end point of that road, where now we have ballots that convey no information from the parties. That's going to be a dramatic change from the way we've done elections in Montana and the way we've done elections pretty much throughout our history. CI-126 takes what's wrong with our current system and makes it worse. So what we've got now is we've gone from ballots in which the parties conveyed their information to us as voters to, under CI-126, ballots that will not convey any information. And the reason why this is so important is because the ballots are the most important source of information that voters rely on. Not ads, not mailers. I stopped by my mailbox an hour ago. You guys have seen all these too. We're getting 10 or 20 of these each day. Do they help? Maybe at the margins. The most important information that voters rely on when they cast their ballots is the information that's provided on the ballot. CI-126 will take away the most important piece of information that we've relied on for 200 years. How do we know that CI-126 will do this? Next slide, please. Because the text of the initiative tells us this. I'm a lawyer. I wanted to go through a lot of text here, but I decided, no, we're not going to do that, especially this late in the day. But more importantly, most of the text of CI-126 doesn't make that big of an impact until you get to subsection J. Subsection J is where the action is. This is the active ingredient of this medication. Subsection J tells us the ballot may not indicate that candidates have been endorsed or nominated by any political party. So that's why we have that big gap in the ballot under CI-126. We're not going to have that information coming to us from the parties the way that we have for the past 200 years. This is the key provision of CI-126. Next slide, please. So let me show you real briefly how this is going to play out in real life. So let's say I'm tired of Gallatin County. I decide to move to Ravalli County. And then a few months later, I decide, you know, I really miss the legislature. I'm going to run for the legislature again. We're under CI-126. I make it through the primary. There's four candidates. The first two are the Democrats. It's Ravalli County. Do we care who the Democrats are? No, we do not. It's Ravalli County. This election is going to be decided between the two Republican candidates, Joe Blow and me. Notice what the ballot tells us. It tells us that Joe Blow likes the party. It tells us I like the party. It tells us what our attitudes as candidates are to the party. It doesn't tell us what the party's attitude is towards us. That's a huge gap. That's a huge gap of information. Because of that gap of information that the parties are not able to give us anymore, someone else is going to give that to us. And that someone else is going to be special interests, it's going to be candidates who have independent wealth, and it's going to be, well, these kind of things are going to matter. Special interests and incumbents, people who are incumbents are going to have a huge advantage under the system. I've got plenty more to say, but I'm getting that ugly red stop sign, so I will stop at this point. Happy to elaborate on any more of this if you have questions.
We'll now take questions from the audience. Each speaker will have 2 minutes to respond to the question. I will mention that we will be watching time to make sure that we don't go too much over the time commitment agreed to by the speakers. Therefore, we may not have time for all questions. Again, we'll start with whoever wants to ask. There's lots left out here. Go ahead.
Frank, what happens if under 127 that you don't reach 50% plus one? Can you elaborate on that? I can.
So the legislature is specifically charged with deciding the system, not who won, but the system we use for that. And it's because there's more than one choice. Honestly, in my opinion, there's basically two, where you have the instant runoff or you have a runoff like they have in Georgia, right? You know, or instant runoff like they have in Alaska. Those are basically your two choices. It's difficult in Montana because we have a single subject rule. The reason you have two in front of you is because we have two different subjects, 126 that says open primaries, 127 that says you have to have 50%. So it would be difficult to make that decision with the, you know, through the constitutional initiative process. And so we've charged the legislature with that. We've put additional constitutional protections into it to make sure there's a very narrow path, but we believe it needs to be that we need to use that public process to make that decision about what that about the process that we use as a state for making that determination.
You do have a chance to make comment if you choose to.
Okay, thank you. I'll comment briefly and thank you for the question. The problem with CI-127, and because I was very poor at managing my time, I didn't get to talk about it. The problem with CI-127, for one thing, is we don't know what it's going to produce. As Frank said, there's at least two different ways that are two different choices, but that leaves a lot of question marks. We have no idea what the legislature is going to give us. They're going to have to give us something because 126 and 127, if they get approved, will force us to have a system where a candidate wins by an absolute majority. So we're going to have some kind of system, but they're not telling us what kind of system it is. And no matter what kind of runoff system we have, whether it's a runoff or ranked choice voting or some other system that someone creates, that creates problems of its own. First of all, it's going to take extra time. We're not going to know on election night who the winner is if there isn't a majority winner. And that may happen a lot. And we're already having severe problems with results not being ready on election night. Sometimes it takes weeks, and that's with no runoff. If we have a runoff election, that length of time is going to be expanded that much more. It's going to have extra costs, because if we have a normal runoff election, that takes extra money, extra costs, there's extra campaigning. That favors incumbents, and that favors challengers that have lots of money. It disfavors people that don't have lots of money and don't have connections with special interests. Finally, 127 will hurt third parties, because right now, the Libertarian Party is a great example. Partly, I like it because I'm now a libertarian. But we saw just a few months ago over at the Brick Reed and Fieldhouse, the Libertarian candidate for Senate was invited by Donald Trump. Why? Because they need to try to pull in Libertarian votes under the current system. Under a runoff system, the major party candidates don't have to care because they know they're going to advance to a runoff. They don't have to care about the Libertarians or any other third parties. Thank you. Thank you for the question.
Go ahead.
Mr. Montfort, your Rivali County example where you're going to have two Republicans that the whole county gets to choose from, how's that different than the two Republicans that the only Republicans get to choose, only Republican primary voters get to choose?
The difference is what you're told. If in the general election, if the Republican candidate in the general election is there, that you know that person's the nominee. They've been selected by the party.
The example you gave at the end, where there have been the two Democrats and two Republicans in Rivali County in the new system,
right?
And you said you don't know which part or which of those two Republicans is endorsed by the party or whatever. How's that any different than today, where in the primary, if you vote in the Republican primary in Rivali County, there's two candidates, they're both Republicans?
The purpose of the primary is to find out who the nominee is, so that when you get to the general election, you know that whoever the Republican is in the general election is the party's nominee. Now, it's problematic under the system we have because we don't really know if the Republican nominee truly represents the Republican Party. They've simply gotten the most votes in a primary. And that's part of the problem we have with the current open primary system.
But in the current system, that's a far smaller number of people make that decision versus this new system would allow more people to at least have consideration for it.
I don't see
the difference other than a smaller number of people.
It's a small number of people only because people aren't participating. I didn't get to see all the statistics in detail, but I'll take Frank at his word when he says there's a lot fewer numbers of people participating in primaries now. That's their choice. I mean, people, every 100% of voters can participate in the primaries now. And the fact that we're not able to pick in the primaries a Libertarian governor and a Republican senator, it's the primary. The general election is what determines who the ultimate office holder is going to be. And in the general election, we have always had the kind of choices that we still have now, which is we can pick a Libertarian governor, a Republican senator, a Democratic House member. We have that right in the general election, and that's where it matters, because the general election is what decides who the office holder is.
You want to? Yeah, you do have also 2 minutes to respond to that question.
What I heard you say was five, but the 5 minutes? No, I'm kidding. It's a disadvantage when you get to go first, right? Is you don't have the chance to rebut. So let me cover a couple of things from these last two questions, and I'm going to feel like I'm cheating because my former colleague keeps making my point for me, right? And here's what I mean by that. First is the system that we have right now. Are you satisfied with it, right? Because if you are, then you probably don't want to hear from me. If you think we're hitting home runs and triples all the time and we are just killing it, right? We're doing just such a super job, our political system is, then maybe we really shouldn't change. I'm just of the mind that we should, in the last 30 years in Congress, pass a budget. Would that be okay, right? How about the immigration reform? How about tax reform at a state, property tax reform at a state level? How about mental health? You want me to go through the whole list? As a career first responder, I could stay just on the public safety side of it. You know why we're not? For the reason he told you, because the parties are telling you who you're going to choose. You're not telling us. I think Montanans will get it right most of the time if we give them a chance. You don't have a chance right now. Right? And we're supposed to believe that the parties, The folks, and I was there, that helped drive us into the ditch, don't worry, we're the only ones that can drive you back out. Trust me. Right? That's what we're supposed to believe. And we're supposed to believe, well, you can't change the Constitution, right? I'm going to give you a quick story about a guy named from Tennessee who was a young legislator. And somebody will have to ask me this question because I'm going to run out of time. It'll take me about a minute to do. But I'll tell you about a young legislator in Tennessee who was told that very same thing, right? You shouldn't change the Constitution. And if somebody gives me the opportunity, I'll tell you why.
Next question.
This gentleman over here.
Yeah. Are you going to give him?
Sorry.
Thank you all. As a preface to my question, I wonder if we could see the text of J again.
Sure, that is. It's up to Beth. She's in charge of the slides. That text is, it's on slide 7. And it's way, I don't know if you noticed, it's way almost at the very bottom of the initiative. But yet it's the key portion of the initiative because that's what's going to change our system in a way that we haven't seen in 200 years.
Well, I have two questions regarding. One is it says may not. I'm not a lawyer, but usually that would say shall not or must not. Is that what may has the force of there?
Yes, it will. I never want to predict what the Montana Supreme Court will say about anything,
right.
But they will interpret that as you may not. Is it, in other words, you shall not.
Now, does that mean that a party, the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, the Libertarian Party, is prohibited from making any kind of statement about any of the candidates who are on the primary ballot whatsoever? Is that what that means?
Excellent question. No, the parties have a First Amendment right to tell you in 100 different ways who their nominee is.
So they could put out flyers. They could put ads in newspapers. They could have public meetings.
Yes.
They could do everything in their power except actually put something directly on the ballot. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Except where it matters most, because the ballot is the most important piece of information.
I just want to make sure that parties are free to say whatever
yes.
they want about the candidates at any time, except actually to print something on the ballot. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, sir.
And by the way, on that point, candidates may. Right? I mean, candidates may identify with party individually, right? And you know, they can still let you know who they are, and parties can still endorse support. There's nothing that prevents that. I would look at my lawyer friend that says, is there anything that keeps them from doing that, right? And so if I want to vote a straight ticket, right, I know who all the R's or D's are, and I want to do that, I can do that, right? If I want to pick one person other than that ballot I can choose right now, just one, I don't have that right, right? And so the reason some of the conservatives I talk to, the reason they believe in this is because it does what we should do in a republic, and that is protect people's rights. It should be the role of government. Whose right is it that I have to have somebody's permission before I choose just one ballot, that I can't consider any of those others, right? That's not, nobody's protecting my right as a voter to be able to do that, right? And the reason we are changing this on a constitutional basis, to get back to my other point real quickly, is we need those protections so we don't get it changed at the whim of some politician or bureaucrat, right? That's why these values have to be placed in the Constitution. Thank you.
Next question.
And you can kick me.
Sounds like you're both describing the benefits and pitfalls of populism in different ways, and I hope you can kind of elaborate on that.
Do you want to start?
Go ahead. Sure. And that is a great question. It goes all the way back to what Plato taught us, is that democracy pure democracy eventually degenerates into tyranny. And that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about populism. That's what the framers were worried about. They were worried about, in essence, too much democracy. Doesn't sound very politically correct to say that, but if we have no controls, if we have pure democracy, eventually it slides into tyranny. And that's why having strong political parties, even though it's not something the founders believed in initially, they all became party leaders eventually, 10 to 15 years later, strong political parties developed in such a way as to mitigate the dangers of too much democracy. We had people, the fat old white guys in the smoke-filled rooms, which we all hate, which we've all been told is anti-democratic. Those people told us that they gave us their wisdom and knowledge, and they had smoke-filled rooms competing with each other. And from that process, we got the kind of outstanding candidates and presidents that we've had throughout our history. So I don't know if that's answering your question or not, but
yeah. And so I'll tell you, here's what our framers told us, right? And one of the slides I didn't get to was from George Washington, who told us to be wary of what? Giving too much power to political parties. And why? Right? Because they would consume us. I mean, that's paraphrasing essentially, right? One of our founding fathers said, be careful what you wish for, right? Be careful what you wish for. So the nice young person that I told you about from Tennessee, 24-year-old, Harry Burns, I believe, right? And you can look this up and see if I get it right. I see a few heads nodding who probably know. He was told, don't you dare, right? This isn't the national constitution. Don't change it, right? We don't want to do that. We don't want to take the risk. And so he got a note from his mother that said, be a good boy and do it anyway. And he did. And he voted. He made the deciding vote on the 19th Amendment to give women the right to vote. I don't think it made us a worse country for doing it, right? So people will stand there and say, you know, we shouldn't do that. We've done it over 30 times with the Montana Constitution. The framers of our state constitution gave us the tools to make you the final arbiter, right? Because they knew, like George Washington told us, that parties, if we gave them the chance, would take more power than they should. That's the world I think we live in. It's the one I worked in, right? It's why we have the results we do. If I took a poll here real quick, said how many of you want us to at least pass a balanced budget or not even a balanced budget, heck, how about a budget at the federal level, right? Most of us would raise our hand, but we haven't in decades. It's not because you don't want to, it's because you don't get to, because we've been incentivized a system the wrong way, and we're going to change it. Guess what? You're going to change it. I don't get to. I get one vote just like you.
Next question.
I was wondering if CI 127 passes, my expectation would be that a huge number of elections would end up in runoffs if that's the option. Do you know if the ability of the legislature to decide how that process would be resolved could include ranked choice voting as the solution? Or is that too far outside of the current framework?
Yeah, I'll take it first, and the answer is yes, right? I mean, so the legislature passed a bill last time to make essentially ranked choice voting illegal, but the rule is no future legislature is bound by a previous legislature. So the answer is yes, they could. That could be one of the choices. And really, if you look out in the world, the majority of places that do that now, it's not like I said, we're not reinventing the wheel here, right? This happens in a lot of places. You really are going to have a runoff, this is my opinion, right, like you do in Georgia, top two kind of runoff, or something like ranked choice, which is an instant runoff, right? So you don't have to go to the, you know, to another election to make that decision.
For what it's worth, I think it's very unlikely that we would have ranked choice voting just because of the fact that the legislature has already taken a pretty strong stand on that. It's a controversial issue. The only other state I'm aware of that has ranked choice voting is Alaska. I know they're trying to get it on the ballot on some other states. But in Alaska right now, there is a ballot initiative to repeal ranked choice voting. So I don't see that going very far. The only other big option would be a standard runoff type election like Georgia and like some other states have. But as we've outlined, no matter what, there's going to be complications. Election day is going to drag on and on and on. It already does. Having a runoff election is going to make it that much worse, that much more expensive. And it's going to make it harder for third parties. And third parties, the ultimate goal of third parties, besides becoming a major party, is to hold the other two parties accountable, to force the other two parties to either steal their voters or steal their issues or both. If we have runoff elections, the power of third parties to do that diminishes to pretty much zero.
I'm wondering if you are opposing 126 and 127, what you see as a potential solution to mitigate the polarization and the inability to work together. To me, that's what attracts me to these two initiatives, is the hope that people might function a little more effectively. So what's your solution, if not this?
Great question. Here's my solution, and I'm probably the only person in the room that thinks this, and probably the only person in the state that thinks this. I think we should go back to the system that we had for 200 years. The system that we had for 200 years worked. We had great candidates. I gave you the names: Lincoln, Roosevelt. All of these folks were picked by that system. That would be my dream solution. I'm the only person who believes in that, so it ain't going to happen. So one other thing we could do, and I would actually support, I would consider supporting 126 if we did one minor change, and I didn't get a chance to talk about this. Could you pull up slide 8 real quick, Beth? Sorry, this is probably a longer answer than what you were looking for. If we take a look at the sample ballot under CI-126, where we've got, and I don't know if it'll come up, but when it does, if you remember, there were two candidates at the bottom, two Republican candidates, me and then Joe Blow. What if we had a system, what if we had a ballot that says Joe Blow, Republican nominee, Matthew Monforton, prefers Republican Party? We could have the best of both worlds. We could have a ballot that tells us who the parties think is the right candidate, but also have additional Republicans if the voters think, yeah, the fat old white guy's got that one wrong. We're going to pick the other Republican. Seems like that would give us the best of both worlds. But that's not what CI-126 gives us. CI-126 does exactly the opposite. It doesn't give us more choices, doesn't give us more voices. It takes away information. And there's no reason why they have to take away that information. We could very easily know who the Republican Party prefers. They could have a convention, they could have a nomination, and convey that information. That could be put on the ballot. We could have the best of both worlds. They don't want that. They want to take away that information from you. And an interesting question is why that is. And because it's 8 o'clock, I'm not going to be able to get into my conspiracy theories as to why that is. But to answer your question, that's how we could solve this.
Frank does have the opportunity to respond.
So I'm going to use my 2 minutes just kind of as a close. First, again, to thank all of you for coming and to thank the folks who put this on. To thank Matthew, I've enjoyed the opportunity to come here and respect his right to be wrong again. Here's what I want you to know. I told you this before. I'm a volunteer. Here's what I get out of it: one vote, just like you do. I get one vote. That's all I'm asking. You don't get one vote right now. Not for everybody who's on the ballot, not everybody who's considered. I want the Montana where your opinion matters more than mine. That's the one I grew up in, right? Where I had to go out and work hard to find out what you wanted and tried to make that happen. And not to feed you the candidate I think is going to be best for you, right? Not to pick people in smoke-filled rooms and then come out and tell you what we're going to work on. Much as I like these three nice ladies, right? I don't want to put them in charge of everything. I want to put you in charge. but only you get to decide. We've done the work with a lot of great volunteers and folks, you know, people that have been out there, partners, to give you the right to do it. It's going to be on the ballot in front of you. So imagine the system you have now and the result it gives you, and now imagine one where you have more choice. The ability to hold people accountable, where you have the right, the freedom to choose who you want to represent you, right? By going to the ballot box and using that vote. And through that, determine what kind of state you want. Not that we won't have hard decisions or hard conversations, but that we can be neighbors when we get done and agree to move on to the next one and work on it too. That's the Montana that I want back. That's the Montana that these initiatives give us the opportunity. They put you back in charge. That's what we hope to do. Thanks.
Thank you.
I have a lot of things I'd like to say. When I was a young trial lawyer, I learned very early on the hard way that when it's near lunchtime or near 5 o'clock, no matter how many great points I have to make to the jury, they don't want to hear it. So I'm going to make this real fast. The problems that we're having in our system today are a result not of parties and party bosses being too strong, but of parties being too weak. Frank and I agree, the system we have now sucks. It's not working. It's producing bad leaders, really bad leaders. And unfortunately, that process may repeat itself in another month. We need to change the system. He wants the change taking us down the road that we've been going down for the last 60 years to its logical endpoint, to a place that will make it even worse. I want to take us back to a system that produced good leaders, that produced the kinds of policies that made this country strong. CI-126 is an extreme change that will further weaken the parties and diminish the quality of the candidates even further than the system we already have, and make demagogues and authoritarians more likely. We need to vote no on CI-126. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for hanging out so late, and thank you to the Bozeman Public Library, to the League of Women Voters for hosting this. I'm happy to stick around if anyone has any questions, but otherwise, all the best, and make sure everyone votes. Take care.
All right. We do have a couple things we're going to close with. One is I want to mention that there is Vote 411. Vote 411 is an online voter guide that all you need to do is put in your address, and it will bring up your candidates. It will bring up questions that were prepared in advance to ask those candidates and how they responded, and a little background information. So it is very simple to use. No matter where you live, you simply enter your address. On behalf of the tonight's event sponsors, the Bozeman Area League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, the Belgrade Community Library, and the Bozeman Public Library, I would like to thank our speakers and all of you for having the interest to attend and find out more about these initiatives. If there's anything else, you can come up later, but I'm going to say goodnight to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was a forum discussing the pros and cons of CI-126 and CI-127 held at the Bozeman Public Library on October 2nd, 2024.